There are places we fear to tread, on the outskirts of consciousness, where something as fleeting as an idea can become an immediate and terrifying reality, where permanence and rationality are outdated concepts, replaced by whim and beauty, where stark reality strikes a chord so deep within our mind that it shocks the very foundation of our core. Universes are created and destroyed in the blink of an eye. How then do you suppose your mortal grasp of value has any effect whatsoever in the multiverse? In the horrifying face of truth, the notion of free will becomes nothing more than a clever smirk. As we stare at the cold blackness of eternity, all reference points dissolve. You have just stepped into the ether.
Greetings, my mortal friends. I just love that. So over the top. Well, this is Tom, your creepy host, and I'll be doing the show alone today. Actually, this is kind of like a rush episode. I was driving home. I met my wife, who I've been separated from for a while, but we met together to do our taxes and had some conversations. So on the way home, I was thinking about what we talked about, and it was just fresh in my mind, and I felt like it was some good realizations I had come to. I wanted to just do an episode really quick about that. I know we said our last episode was about angels, and we were going to do an episode about demons. But the powers that be have stopped it from happening. This isn't the first time this has happened. You know, like me, I believe that there's just overlapping realities and there's spiritual forces, constantly, interfering with our actions and decisions, constantly changing our paths. And I feel like after several attempts to record the episode, each one being thwarted in some strange way, I felt that the episode was not proper to put out there. And I did all the groundwork, you know, I did the notes and everything, and I was all prepared. But then when I finally made the realization that the universe was saying no, it was hard, but I had to let it go, because I know that if I chose a path contrary to, you know, the spiritual forces, that I would actually be damaging myself in some way, because they were seeking to protect me or protect somebody, you know. If I were to... Maybe if I went over that episode, if I said some of the things I was going to say, who knows, it could have changed anybody's path. And the most dangerous thing it could have done is opened a curious person's eyes and had people meddling with things they shouldn't be. So this episode is not about demons, which is probably an episode that I won't be doing now. Unless the universe gives me the go-ahead. But this episode is actually about independence and dependence. And what I mean by that is we all get into these relationships where we become dependent on each other, and I don't want to say that that happened in my relationship, because it didn't, at least not in any like traditional way. But there is something that happens with every relationship that is completely unintentional, and that's psychological dependence. And when you get close to people, you tend to put all your eggs in one basket. In other words, like everyone has this like dream idea where they're going to go out and they're going to find like that one person that is everything, and then they don't need to look anymore. It's just like it's a riddle that they solved and they don't have to solve it anymore. And I actually think that that's kind of contrary to the nature of love. It's like you conquer something or solve something, and then all of a sudden you're done with it, and you don't have to do anything else. So I think like the true nature of love is a continual willingness, or continual pursuit. That's probably a better word. It's not like the relationship between like a lion and a gazelle. It's not like, oh, you caught it, now you eat it, now it's done. It's more like the relationship between Batman and Joker, where it's like the person is really not looking to exactly conquer the other person, because that would strip them of their meaning. Could you imagine how empty Batman's life would be if he didn't have Joker to balance his actions? So it's like, you know, good and bad, those kind of opposites create each other and need each other. So like a good functional relationship would have that balance, you know. And sometimes, you know, Batman catches Joker and lets him get away, and sometimes Joker catches Batman and lets him get away. And it's not because it's not necessarily because it's right or wrong. It's because they enjoy the game so much. Or they enjoy the pursuit. Like, they're actually creating meaning between each other. Like, any force that is contrary to your goal is actually making the prize more valuable. We get in this idea that if somebody stands in our way, that they're the bad guy. You know, if somebody, I don't know, like if we have like a bad boss, and we start blaming them, saying, oh, I'm not succeeding because they're in the way. But the truth is they're not an obstacle. They're a challenge, and it's a challenge of will. Like, is your will stronger than their will? Is your will to pursue or to continue towards a better future, a better job? Is your will greater than the will of the thing that is trying to prevent you? So in a way, everything that we perceive as a bad guy or an obstacle is really a teacher that is creating value in our destination. In other words, let's talk about Mario. You know, I love Mario. I love Batman. I'm still like 15 years old in my head, so all my metaphors come from entertainment. So, okay, Mario and Princess, right? Supposedly perfect balance, the perfect like cliche, like rescue the princess kind of archetype, metaphor, whatever. So Bowser comes in, steals the princess from Mario, and Mario has to go through all these obstacles, go through all these castles and just volumes of villains, and he has to destroy, beat, whatever, all these different things to get the princess back. And we look at this like Koopa's bad, like, oh, Koopa's just this bad guy, he's just doing mean things to be mean or whatever. But what's actually happening is like Mario has something that he takes for granted, or he has like a princess, he's complete, but there's no meaning in the completion. In other words, he's like if Mario's yin and the princess's yang, like they complete each other. There's nothing to do. There's no challenge and there's no meaning. It's like incompletion actually creates meaning. So this obstacle or villain appears, Koopa, takes the princess away, essentially takes half of Mario's spirit away, and then he has to go through all these different things to earn her back or to become complete again. So, like, what we perceive as the bad guy is actually creating value in the princess. In other words, he had something that had no value because he didn't earn it. It was just the natural state. Like Mario and Princess together is just the natural state. And then when something unnatural happened, he had to work for it to get it back. In other words, he didn't appreciate the natural state until something unnatural had corrupted it and he had to work hard to get it back. So every like obstacle that he fought, every spiky turtle, every Lakitu, whatever, they're all challenges, and they're all cr each one's creating more and more value in his eventual prize, which is getting the princess back. So we have this idea in our head that that bad guy, like there's good guys and there's bad guys. Bad guys are just bad for no reason, and good guys stop bad guys. But the truth is, there's actually a lot more, like humbleness and goodness in the bad guy because they are choosing the more difficult role. And in choosing that role, they give another person the opportunity to appear as the good guy. So by Koopa choosing to appear as bad to every single kid in the universe, he's choosing to also make Mario appear good, because obviously you can't have any opposites unless you need one opposite to have the other. Otherwise, there's nothing to compare it to. And then that flips the entire universe upside down because the bad guy is actually more good than the good guy, because the bad guy chooses to appear bad and make the good guy look good. So we have to get out of this idea of bad and good and just see things as the way they are. If there's some sort of person or obstacle that you perceive as bad, like stop, take a deep breath, and really analyze what it is about them that you don't like, and see that it's something in yourself. Like any negative quality, anything that you dislike in somebody else is actually something that they're revealing to you. That's a trait that you already have in yourself, and they're showing it to you. And we, upon hearing this news, refuse it and choose to believe that we're good and they're bad. It's like somebody holds up a mirror to you and you're like, oh my gosh, I have a gash on my face. Like, I hate you, person that's holding up the mirror, instead of realizing that they're just playing their role. It's just a big stage, and like that is their line. Their line is to come up to you and show you something about yourself, and then, react however you want, but essentially, you're just hurting yourself if you blame other people. So realize that everything is within yourself. The theme that I chose for this episode is dependence and independence. And the reason I chose it is because, like I was saying before about the Mario Princess metaphor, I had refused to take responsibility for my life and for my actions, and had instead given the responsibility to other people. In other words, you get a job, right? And let's say you start working for a boss that you don't like or don't get along with or whatever. But it's their business. They put the job together. They built it from the ground up. So it's theirs. And by you working for them, you're actually selling a part of your soul and choosing to compromise your own desire and your own needs in order to serve somebody else. Now I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just the nature of it. But I had always wanted the power of responsibility, or I've always wanted the reward or the energy or the cash or whatever, without the responsibility. So I tried to find situations where I could come out on top, without exerting the appropriate amount of energy. In other words, let's say you're at the fair, right? And there's corn dogs, funnel cakes, and let's say you want a corn dog, and you don't feel like it's worth $7, which it is not, but you're in a situation where you don't have the opportunity to spend what it's actually worth, so you compromise. You end up giving a little bit more of yourself for this thing than you really intended to. And that's the nature of most interactions with people. In fact, it's kind of the cornerstone of capitalism. It's a sort of a spiritual highway robbery. And you'll notice in interactions with people, what they do most of the time is they try to get out with a little bit more than they offer. And it's this mentality that has just crippled the world that we're living in today. It's this idea that people can profit or come out on top. Like, our goal is to come out on top. In other words, our goal is to conquer instead of to balance. When our goal should always be to find the middle ground. Like, if you go to a store, the price is already marked and there's no negotiating. It's like you have to pay what the listed price is instead of what it's actually worth, whatever energy has actually been put into it. Like, I don't know, let's say you want to get a bunch of bananas. And they're like, I don't know, like 50 cents a pound or something. And the actual value without profit, minus the concept of profit, just balance would be 10 cents. So basically, instead of us climbing a tree, getting our own bananas, and exerting our own energy for it, which would probably be 10 cents worth of energy if we were to convert our physical energy into cash. So instead of doing that, and of course, this is hypothetical because we're not going to find any bananas where we're living, most likely, unless we're in like the Congo or something. So instead of exerting the amount of energy that is appropriate to the amount of reward, and coming out at a balance, capitalism and, well, most human civilizations have employed this idea of taking a little bit of advantage of the person. They're saying, oh, this person is not going to go out and make their own food from scratch. So I'm going to charge them a little bit more than the food is actually worth. So the person charging a little bit more becomes part of this imbalance. They get more energy and more power than they deserve, considering all these different people are investing their money. And then the people who bought the bananas are have a little bit less energy than they had before. So it's like this imbalance where the lower class are exerting more energy and getting less reward, while the upper class are exerting less energy and getting more reward. So this is something that needs to be restored. This balance needs to be restored. And the way to restore this balance is to become dependent once again. Like someone somewhere whispered into our ear that we need other people. And once we believed that, then it just started snowballing, and then we had this idea that we can't survive on our own. And I actually believe this has a lot to do with being mammals, as opposed to being reptiles, because our very first memories, when we are just starting to evolve our own identity and our own consciousness, are of breastfeeding. So the first thing we remember is needing our mother for life, for sustenance, whatever. So imprint that on every single human's head. Every human that's born, they all believe that they need somebody else to survive. And as a result, we become kind of a very fickle species. We can be very compassionate and very loving towards each other, but then since we're dependent on each other, or at least because that psychological imprint was made, then we can become very aggressive. And that's the whole reason like wars begin, because somebody believes that they need something that somebody else has. And then, I mean, it's a larger scale and it's a much more sophisticated process, but it's no different than like Cain and Abel, or like killing your brother because they have a goat that you feel that you need instead of making your own or making your own farm or whatever. So it's the idea that we need other people instead of just being content with what we have and being able to create more. Actually, on my ride home, this sentence popped in my head. It was, the sun said to Icarus, "Why not evolve wings instead of stealing from where the bee stings?" Very simple, but speaks volumes. Obviously, Icarus's wings were made of wax. They were phony, they were false, and he tried to fly to the sun wearing false wings, and they melted and he fell. But if he were to properly evolve over time and create his own real wings made of feathers, then he would be able to fly to the sun. And then he would be able to deserve the prize that he was seeking. But he stole the wings from the worker bees. He stole the wax from the bee's nest. And the bees sting back. So once we release this mentality of dependence, we are now capable of doing anything because we don't rely on any other person to make decisions for us or to feed us. Like I said before, this has a lot to do with being mammals. That first imprint of breastfeeding, like that creates the mentality of dependence. But then you look at like reptiles and like turtles or lizards, they're hatched. Like they come from an egg, and when they hatch, most of the time the mothers have gone, whether it's turtles or lizards, geckos, whatever. Their mother leaves them So the moment they're born, like the idea of independence is imprinted on them. So they immediately have to fend for themselves. They immediately have to find their own food and water and shelter. And they're still social creatures, but they don't have that same like dependence link. So they can do or be anything without like fear of hesitation. And the very simple fact that they're like completely vulnerable at birth means that only the strongest survive. Obviously, a predator sees like a weak reptile, they'll eat it up without second thought. So it's almost a superior evolutionary process, like weeding out the weak immediately and destroying the idea of dependence. So the only ones that survive are the strong-willed and the independent. And that explains why dinosaurs thrived for so long. Like at some point they were just they ruled the earth. And the reason they failed is probably because of the same reason humans are going to fail, and that's because they got too big and they got too greedy. Eventually they lost self-control and just kept evolving into something that was gigantic, and it didn't allow anything else in the ecosystem to function. And that's what humans have become now. Like we've become these giant, fat, greedy parasites that are just, we're taking everything from the earth and we've thrown the ecosystem out of balance. Like we don't work with other species. We take from them. We don't give anything back. So humans are an imbalance in the equation, and humans may not last that much longer, unless they learn to properly operate with other species. Like humans have to destroy this idea of dominance. And even the idea of dominance itself is an idea that spawned from the idea of dependence. So being mammals, having that close-knit thought process, like once we realize once we think that we need other people, then we get this idea in our head that in order to be happier or be better, we have to have more of whatever those people have, more of their life energy or more of their attention or whatever. So we start doing these outrageous things in order to get this attention energy, whether it's starting wars, getting into fights with your significant other, whether it's performing on a stage in front of people. Like these are all attempts to get more attention energy, to get more love. And we're all dependent on each other for love. What we fail to notice is that love is already everywhere. It's saturated in every cell in your body. It's in every molecule in the universe. We only need to become aware of it. It's already there. Like we've created the illusion that it's absent, because that's what we do. Because absence creates meaning. It's exactly the same as the Mario metaphor. Like, Princess is already there. Like, he just creates the illusion or the scenario of an absence in order to create value in the realization of the truth that's already been. Well, I'm gonna do a quick break here, play some music. I don't know if you guys have noticed. The music that we've been playing in the bumpers is all original stuff. Played a couple songs I wrote. There's a couple that Ethan's done. This one is called Samurai Buddha. Thank you. Welcome back. So that song was 95% Ethan. Pretty much arranged and composed the entire thing. I think I may have done one riff. So that's called Samurai Buddha. I dig that one. It's very, it's got like a Native American feel to it. Very peaceful. So, getting back to dependence and independence, I don't want to create the wrong impression. I don't want to say that I think that we don't need each other. Obviously, it's nice to be loved. It's nice to interact with people. It's nice to do all these things that make us feel special. But we've also kind of created this idea that like suffering is the only way that we can really connect. You know, like a person doesn't really understand you or doesn't appreciate you unless they suffer with you. And we've created that idea and lived according to it. You know, like if you have a bad day and you want to bitch about it, it's like you want to share your pain. So you can do that, I mean, but it's not the way that we are meant to connect. We should always be independent. We should never need another person for anything, although we can cooperate with each other when our goals synchronize. So the reason I wanted to do this episode, the reason this topic is important to me, is because I've recently realized that I've spent my whole life being dependent on other people and using that as an excuse to be lazy. Going back to the job metaphor, which is a very common one, and I've used it for plenty of situations. If you have a boss that you don't like, but you're still working for, well, essentially, like, the reason that you're unhappy is because you've compromised. Like, instead of taking the role of a leader, instead of becoming the leader that you know you need to be, instead of taking the responsibility for your life and becoming something better, you compromised, allowed somebody else to take charge of your life. And in doing that, a piece of your spirit dies, and then you create this concept of blame. Like, it's my boss's fault that I'm not making enough money, or it's my boss's fault that my job sucks. I mean, it's all just excuses that you're making up to justify your own decisions. If you want to be a leader, if you want to be a boss, if you want to really take charge of your life and do something good, like, do it from the ground up. You have to create your own thing, like, create your own business, create your own identity from scratch. Don't listen to anybody else. Don't be swayed by anybody else, and never buy the lie that you need somebody, because as soon as somebody creates that trap, somebody can create the trap that you need them, and then you compromise your will. They're actually stealing your personal energy. It's kind of like a drug. Like, we become addicted to this mindset. Now, it's different, somewhat different. It's not so much obviously, it can cause physical damage, but mostly it's psychological damage. And that's, you know, a disappointment in yourself. If you don't become what you're supposed to be, if you don't work hard and do something that's rewarding, then you're going to regret it. And then you'll look for other people to blame for your decisions. So anytime you feel negatively towards another person, remember that it's just yourself. You're just feeling that about yourself, disappointment in yourself. So see them as a teacher, see them as a mirror, and don't hate them for what they reveal, whatever qualities you have in yourself. Now, this is an enormous responsibility to take on. Instead of relying on other sources to blame or to do the work for you, you have to do it all, which means that there is no easy way, there is no shortcut. And if you actually want a life with value, then you're choosing a hard path. And if you want the most valuable life that you can have, then essentially you're choosing the most difficult path, because value is created by oppression, and the greater the oppression that you conquer, or the greater oppression that you overcome, the greater reward you feel upon completion. The bigger the Bowser castle, the happier you are to rescue the princess. And don't settle for Toad. Like, he's at the end of every false castle. Never compromise. That's actually something I've noticed in my life. Whenever I have this idea in my head of something that I want, and I start pursuing this, the closer and closer I get to achieving it, the closer false rewards are put in my way. Let's say, for example, you have this idea in your head. This totally just happened like 3 days ago. I just wanted Chipotle. Like, all day I was thinking about Chipotle, and it was absolutely what I wanted more than anything. And I ended up like starving myself all morning because I never had an opportunity to drive out there. And I was at like Publix. I had a chance to get some food there. I was driving out all day, but it was nowhere near Chipotle. But I kept saying no, like, I'm not going to compromise. Like, I want what I want. And so I didn't. I held off. And then finally, like, after starving all day, it's dinner time. And I'm like, all right, I'm driving there. I'm going to get it. So I go there and get in line. And I get in line, like, at the exact moment where, like, it's like the bottom of the fajitas, where like all the green peppers and onions are old, and they're like one scoop away from replacing it. And I told the server, or the woman who was like dishing it out, I told her like I'd wait for the fresh ones. I said it like three times. She didn't hear me, or didn't want to hear me, or whatever. It just gave me the old ones. And I was just like, huh, like, okay. So, like, dumbfounded, like, not knowing what to do, I just went through the motions, paid for it, got my drink and everything, sat down outside, looked at my food, and looked at my drink, and I was just like, no, like, this is compromising, this is not what I want. Like, I waited for it, I wanted it to be perfect, I wanted it to be delicious, and it was one little teeny bit, one molecule of imperfection. And I was like, this is not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to compromise my will. So I just got up and threw it all away, like, brand new, didn't take a bite out of it or anything. And it's funny, I actually told this to Ethan, and he's like, you just wasted the whole thing. And I was like, it's funny the way, like, different people interpret different things. But I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't even think about it like being wasteful. Like, I actually thought it would be wasteful for me to eat that, because it's like compromising. You know, it's less than what I wanted. It's less than what I expected. So I would, I know it's ridiculous, and it's such a like small thing to like blow into these huge proportions, but that's how I see everything. Like, everything in life is this huge, epic ordeal. Like, everything has value, everything's important, and everything means something. So, everything is like a challenge. Every situation that's presented to you is a challenge, and you have to find the way to deal with it or learn from it so that the next time a similar situation comes, you can be more prepared. So to me, throwing it away was empowering. It was like I was victorious. Like eating it would have been defeat. And I've adopted this mentality recently. Well, it's been in development for a long time, but basically it's about like no compromise. It's like when I get my heart set on something, if I want something, I'm going to pursue it. I'm not going to settle for second best. And anybody who presents me with something that's less than perfect, I'll respectfully deny. But that's also the mentality that I'm catering to in every aspect of life. It's I want to be a better person. That means only letting the good in. I had gotten in the habit of being like a spiritual pig, basically. I was just like consuming like everything anybody would tell me. I was like believing what people would say. I was absorbing their perspectives and their versions of truth, their versions of reality. And I took all this stuff in, and then I tried to make sense of it, and it was just like my spirit was just garbage. It was just full of all this random garbage that didn't make sense, and it was just chunks of nonsense and unprocessed energy. So when I realized this, that's when I decided I want to be pure. Like, I'm not going to allow anything in. Like, I'm going to just only allow the purest, goodest energy. Goodest, I don't even know if that's bestest. And in order to do that, it requires complete discipline and complete focus. So, no matter how starved my spirit is, or no matter how starved my physical body is, I'm not going to settle for something less than perfect because I want to evolve. I want to be something better. I want everything inside my spirit to be perfect. Perfect, good, healthy, pure energy. That means not only what I eat, but what I observe and who I hang out with. Like watching a horror movie, watching pornography, like that would be detrimental to my spirit. Watching, I don't know, like listening to death metal. I mean, obviously you draw your own lines. You know where it's appropriate for you. But all these negative things that could be impure or detrimental to the spirit, like I would refuse them entry. Basically, I become like very, very anal retentive. Just not allowing anything to sway me or control me in any way. Being, again, independent, which is completely the message that I'm conveying. I want to be independent of outside influence, so nobody can ever put a piece of their spirit inside of me. Nobody can ever plant an idea inside of me. Everything that I learn is going to be from scratch, like an infant. I'm going to understand reality from a completely fresh perspective and maintain my individuality and enjoy the company of others, obviously, and enjoy the way that they interpret reality, but not allow them to alter my perspective and never allow them to tell me that I'm wrong. That was a big mistake that I made with several people over the course of my life. Like, there's been times when people have had such confidence and such an aggressive personality that they were able to convince me that their version of the truth or their version of reality was the accurate one or the real one or whatever. And when I accepted that, basically I lived by their rules and they became my God. So it's like by adopting another person's version of reality, you actually serve them instead of yourself. And that's the same principle that I was saying with the boss metaphor. Like, if you compromise for somebody else, you're working for them. So I'm going to have, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have complete confidence in my decisions, complete independence. I won't allow anyone to shake my faith, because every time that's ever happened, like, it's always been wrong. And I don't know why or how people still fool me sometimes, but there's never, ever been a situation where someone has proven or has convinced me that I'm wrong, and then I haven't discovered later that it was actually them who was wrong. And I'm not talking about matters of opinion. I'm talking about, like, matters of reality. You know, somebody presents their interpretation, they say, this is truth. And then, you just live a little bit longer and you find out that everything's true. Like, everything is true and everything is possible and everything's been done. Like, your life as an individual is just what you choose to see and the order in which you choose to see it. And that's everything that you are. That's everything that you have. So don't allow anybody else to compromise it. All right, I'm going to play another song for you. This one's called Transport Dream. This is another song that's collaboration with me and Ethan, mostly Ethan. So hope you dig it. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm going to take the radio show into kind of an abstract direction now. That seems to be my theme anyway. But when I talk about dependence and independence, I think there's a direct correlation with infinite and finite. The people who act independently have more of an infinite mindset, and the people who act dependently have a finite mindset. And here's why. If you make decisions dependent on other people, and if you interact with people always trying to come out on top, or if you try to get something from them. Like a lot of times when people interact with each other, they're just trying to conquer each other, or they're trying to get some of their energy or, for themselves. So that mindset, that I'm starving kind of mindset, is a finite mindset. Basically, they want something to fill their void, but they don't want to create the thing that fills the void, so they want to take it from another person. So the whole reason people steal from each other is because they don't see the infinite. They only see what's immediately in front of them, the finite. They only see a part of the story. If you saw that there was infinite possibility, there's infinite food, infinite energy for everybody, then you wouldn't steal from each other. There'd be no need to. People mistreat each other because they're bound to a finite mindset. They fight over a loaf of bread, kill each other over a goat. And it's all about them being addicted to this idea. They're addicted to the idea that there's a limited amount of anything. And once you set yourself free from that idea, you become infinite. But the trick to becoming infinite, and the trick to understanding the infinite, is to embrace independence. And this is like the path to enlightenment, the path to godhood, is to take responsibility for your life. Don't let anybody else control you. Don't let anybody else convince you that you need them. You need nothing. Everything you need is already built into you. You're completely autonomous and self-sufficient. So when you accept that, you start producing your own energy to fill the void. And this is kind of like embracing the moment. And here's what I mean by that. Let's say you want a new car. Now, how do you get a car? Well, you take a loan, which is borrowing from somebody else, or you save on your own, which is, an exercise in patience, or you steal money from somebody else and do it. And of course, the latter is a very dangerous path, because karmically speaking, once you steal from somebody else, you've allowed the opportunity for yourself to be stolen from. So it's risky business. Basically, anything that happens to you is something that you've done to someone else to some extent. So stealing is obviously clearly a bad idea. I mean, that's a moral, there's no question behind that. But why is it bad? And the answer is because it breeds a finite mindset, and a finite mindset is detrimental. Now, if you were to save up the money on your own to pay for the car, like every paycheck you set aside like $10 or something like that for, I don't know, a year, a couple years, who knows? Then by the time you actually get the car, not only will you completely appreciate it, but it will be completely yours. You will have earned it by yourself, completely independently. It's something that can never be taken from you. And I believe that without error, that karma works absolutely perfectly. Like if you work independently, if you earned everything you have, you will not be stolen from, because karma is essentially the principle of gravitation. So whatever you do, you gravitate towards yourself. Whatever decisions you make, you create that energy field, and that draws in those other situations. So if you're good to people, that creates a good magnet. It draws good people towards you. If you're bad, then it draws bad people. So the reason I was talking about buying a car is because I want to express the idea that owning something, earning something, has everything to do with time. Now, essentially, money is time. You've heard the expression, time is money, money is time, whatever. The reason that's true is because when you get a paycheck, you're actually getting paid for the time that you're at work. So when you take that money, what it actually is time. So you're accumulating this great amount of time over like a year or two, and then when the time comes to redeem your reward, aka your car, then you take all the time that you've been saving, and then you give it to somebody else, and they swap something of equal value to you. So basically, essentially, if we could develop some sort of a time bank, that would probably be much more efficient than the idea of money. That way, people could literally work for time, and then the amount of time that they work, they could get their car. Anyways, I digress. I'm kind of getting off topic. Everything that you get should be a product of your own time invested. America, in its greed, has developed these systems of stealing. Not just capitalism. It's like this nationwide thought cancer, where like we all think that we have to take from each other, and the person who is the most moral is the person who steals the smallest amount, and it's sheer insanity. Now I'm going to shift gears again and jump to a completely different subject that you'll see is related, but my brain works in a very sporadic way. Eventually it all comes together and makes sense. So I don't know if you guys have ever seen David Blaine. Basically he's a street magician, and he does a lot of sleight of hand kind of work. You know, he does like illusions, but I also believe that he does real magic as well. I think that he incorporates real magic. And I think that most people who use real magic do blend it in with stage magic, because if you do a couple stage tricks and then you do like a real trick, like, okay, the people watching, they can make sense of the stage tricks. They can say, oh, well, I guess he could have done it this way. I guess that could have been a mirror or whatever. And then every once in a while, you throw in one that is real magic. And because it's grouped together with the stage magic, the people go, geez, I can't think of any possible way that he could have done that. But since I figured out some of the other ones, I'll just take his word for it. It must be true. It must be stage magic. But I think that's the way most true magicians, and oh, that's magic with a K. I think that they have a way of blending it in so smoothly and so gently with common things that you don't even notice that it's there. So the reason I'm telling you about David Blaine is because I think a lot of his magic comes from the patience and the accumulation of energy over time. So it's like this: you have your own body of energy. You can use your energy however you want, just like a paycheck, right? But in the same way, if you save up a little bit over a long amount of time, you're able to do something really big with it all of a sudden. For example, you can get the car, or if we're talking about energy, you can save up energy over a great deal of time and then suddenly manifest it or exert it in one moment of like perfect synchronicity, where you could just create what you want right there in front of everyone's eyes. And I believe that's what David Blaine does. Like a lot of his, if you've watched any of his specials, he does like one big thing, like one big event where he either, I've seen one where he like locks himself in a block of ice. Basically, he froze himself in a block of ice and just stayed in there for, I don't know, days or something like that. And over time, like people were just coming up to him and like looking, and he had acquired like these huge crowds of people, you know, the news and everybody was there. And then he did the same thing with this giant like pedestal. He just like stood on top of it, like balanced himself on top of this giant beam that was like right in the middle of the city. Same thing, he did this for hours and hours. And in my opinion, my belief is that what he was doing was accumulating energy, basically saving his paychecks, you know, whereas most people would be out there like spending their energy as they receive it. You know, like you get your paycheck, you go out for a drink after work, and then you get donuts to sober up or something. Like that's the usual cycle. But let's say that like you just work diligently for hours and hours and hours, days, weeks, months, whatever. Don't spend any more than you need to. And then imagine the amount of excess energy you'd have that you could use on anything you wanted. So I believe that's what he's doing. And I think in the process of accumulating, he uses that energy sometimes out when he's doing his street magic. Although probably 90% of his street magic is rehearsed or illusions of some sort. But there is that small amount that is actual, where, you know, he could bend the laws of physics or nature or whatever, and could do it in a way that is so smooth that nobody would notice. Now, the reason I told you about that is because I believe that that patience, that mindset, is the solution that we're looking for. It's the willingness to wait, and it's the willingness to take as long as you need to take to do what you actually want to do. The finite mind tries to take from other finite minds. Then the infinite mind says, I don't want to be part of that cycle. I want to be completely independent. I don't want to steal from anybody else. What I want to do is self-produce everything. But I will never let anyone take what I've earned. So let's put this in layman's terms. We all get hungry and then we want to fill that void. And that could be any kind of hunger, you know, it could be company, attention, food, sex. We get these urges and then it's we seek to fulfill them. Now let's look at this this energy thing in terms of money again, because it's the perfect metaphor. Basically, somebody gets hungry and they want to fill their void with energy. So the finite person tries to get it from somebody else, and it's not just stealing, they get it from entertaining, serving, whatever. But basically they're seeking something else to fill that void, something outside of themselves. Now, in terms of money, let's say that you have a void that is a $5 void, right? So you have to go out and get a cheeseburger that's $5, and that will fill that void. But that action in itself is still seeking fulfillment from outside of your own spirit. So, what if you were to fill that void? We're gonna say it's a $5 void. So, if you want to fill that $5 void, option number one is eat something that is from somebody else and is greasy and fatty and it's not good for you, and it actually cost you more than $5 to digest it. If we're gonna do a ratio of energy to money spent, you're actually investing more personal energy to digest that cheeseburger than $5 worth. So even though it satisfies you right at that moment, even though it fills that void, it actually leaves a greater void in the future. And then it creates a cycle where you have a greater void, and then you start requiring more cheeseburgers to fill that, and then you get more and more hungry, and it just continues indefinitely, and then eventually you have society where we're at right now, where everybody thinks that they're starving and everybody just consumes insanely, furiously. But let's rewind and let's say you don't want to fill that void from something else. You don't want to ring up a spiritual credit card bill. You don't want to eat something that's going to make you process more. It's in the long run, it costs more than you invest in it. So we have to fill that void on our own. And the way that I've found to do that is by, I know this seems abstract, but is by perceiving time more slowly. The rate at which you perceive time changes the amount of energy that you exert. Let's say you're working, okay? You're at a job. You work for 1 hour. And then your neighbor right next to you, they work for 1 hour. However, you perceive time twice as slowly as they do. So in that 1 hour that they've worked, you've actually produced more energy than them. Like the energy would be compacted more densely. So your hour's worth of time would actually be more potent than their hour's worth of time because you perceive it more slowly. And the willingness to perceive time more slowly is the solution to filling the void. If I have a $5 void, then I need only perceive time more slowly to fill that void, because the rate at which I perceive simply existing will be exerting more energy. So anytime you feel that void, There's two choices. I mean, you can eat from someone else, essentially stealing from them, or you can choose to perceive time more slowly. And it's the decision between a finite or an infinite path, because you start perceiving time more slowly, and then the next time you'd have to perceive it even more slowly and even more slowly. So every time this void is presented to you, you have to continue to perceive time more slowly until you perceive it practically at a standstill, in which case you become timeless and basically like a god. In the same way that you would perceive time more and more and more slowly, the finite mindset, which is devouring furiously anything they can get their hands on, like time just keeps going faster, and they're never filled, and they're always stealing from something else. So my overall message of this entire show is, do you want to be infinite, or do you want to be finite? Has everything to do with whether you take control of your own life, and only your own life. Like, that is the path to divinity. We all start from the finite. We all believe that illusion that we need each other, or that we need to feed off of each other. But that's not true. Eventually, it comes to a point where we have to decide, like, do we want to live forever, or do we want to die? And I'm not going to say, like, what happens when you live forever. Like, a lot of people believe that you go to heaven or hell. Like, my opinion is everything is right here. Like, this is heaven and hell, and wherever your mind is at the time is what place you're in. Like, there's no ultimate heaven. There's no ultimate hell. You don't get punished infinitely for one mistake. It's more like you get punished at the exact amount of mistake that you made, and you get rewarded for the exact amount of good karma. But you can choose to go back and forth as much as you want. But I personally believe that everything is right here, heaven and hell, and that you don't necessarily die. You just disappear from certain people's perception. There's no black and white line, like alive or dead. It's just that you are perceived by the people that are understood, or that understand your mindset. And death is really just the end of a mindset. So if someone has died in your life, it means that that mentality has died from your own consciousness. People speak of ghosts, their dead ancestors coming and visiting them. I absolutely believe that's true. There's different layers of reality, and nobody ever dies. They just switch channels, basically. And those who choose to evolve, those who choose to live infinitely, they're constantly switching to a higher vibration, a higher dimension. And at certain points, they can communicate with the people on the lower dimensions, but for the most part, they just keep going up. So I'll leave you guys with that. A little bit sporadic episode today, but my brain's all over the place. So hope you guys enjoyed it, and make sure you check out Facebook, Into the Ether. Click like on our page, and check out our website at 444radionetwork.com. See you next week. If you're a business looking for advertising opportunities, contact ITEBusinessLine at yahoo.com. Be sure to check out our website at 444radionetwork.com to keep up with current events and the freshest episodes of Jax and ITE. For emails, suggestions, and questions, contact us at iteshow@yahoo.com.